Chapter 21 Accumulation and Reproduction on an Extended Scale. Part 1 It has been shown in Volume 1 how accumulation works in the case of the individual capitalist. By the conversion of the commodity capital into money, the surplus product, in which the surplus value is represented, is also turned into money. The capitalist reconverts the so metamorphosed surplus value into additional natural elements of his productive capital. In the next cycle of production, the increased capital furnishes an increased product. But what happens in the case of the individual capital must also show in the annual reproduction as a whole, just as we have seen it happen on analyzing simple reproduction, namely, that the successive precipitation, in the case of individual capital, of its used-up fixed component parts in money which is being hoarded, also finds expression in the annual reproduction of society. If a certain individual capital is equal to 400c plus 100v, and the annual surplus value is equal to 100, then the commodity product amounts to 400 constant capital plus 100 variable capital plus 100 surplus value, or 400c plus 100v plus 100s. These 600 are converted into money. Of this money, again, 400c are converted into the natural form of constant capital, 100v into labour power, and provided the entire surplus value is being accumulated, 100s are converted, besides, into additional constant capital by transformation into natural elements of the productive capital. It is assumed in this case, 1. That this amount is sufficient under the given technical conditions either to expand the functioning constant capital or to establish a new industrial business. But it may also happen that surplus value must be converted into money, and this money, hoarded for a much longer time before this process, that is, before real accumulation, expansion of production, can take place. 2. That production on an extended scale has actually been in process previously. For in order that the money, the surplus value hoarded in money form, may be converted into elements of productive capital, one must be able to buy these elements on the market as commodities. It makes no difference if they are not bought as finished products but made to order. They are not paid for until they are in existence, and at any rate not until actual reproduction on an extended scale, an expansion of hitherto normal production, has taken place so far as they are concerned. They had to exist potentially, that is, in their elements, as it requires only the impulse of an order, that is, the purchase of commodities before they actually exist, and their anticipated sale, for their production really to take place. The money on the one side then calls forth extended reproduction on the other, because the possibility of it exists without money. For money in itself is not an element of real reproduction. For instance, capitalist A, who sells during 1 year or during a number of years certain quantities of commodities successively produced by him, thereby converts into money also that portion of the commodities which is the vehicle of surplus value, the surplus product, or in other words, the very surplus value produced by him in commodity form, accumulates it gradually, and thus forms for himself new potential money capital. Potential because of its capacity and mission to be converted into elements of productive capital. But in actual fact, he only engages in simple hoarding, which is not an element of actual reproduction. His activity at first consists only in successively withdrawing circulating money out of the circulation. Of course, it is not impossible that the circulating money thus kept under lock and key by him was itself, before it entered into circulation, a portion of some other hoard. this hoard of A, which is potentially new money capital, is not additional social wealth any more than it would be if it were spent in articles of consumption. But money withdrawn from circulation, which therefore previously existed in circulation, may have been stored up at some prior time as a component part of a hoard, may have been the money form of wages, may have converted means of production or other commodities into money, or may have circulated portions of constant capital or the revenue of some capitalist. It is no more new wealth than money, considered from the standpoint of the simple circulation of commodities, is the vehicle not only of its actual value, but also of its tenfold value, because it was turned over 10 times a day, realized 10 different commodity values. The commodities exist without it, and it itself remains what it is, or becomes even less by depreciation, whether in one turnover or in 10. Only in the production of gold, inasmuch as the gold product contains a surplus product, a depository of surplus value, is new wealth, potential money, created, and it increases the money material of new potential money capitals only so far as the entire money product enters into circulation. Although this surplus value, hoarded in the form of money, is not additional new social wealth, it represents new potential money capital, on account of the function for which it is hoarded. We shall see later that new money capital may arise also in a way other than the gradual conversion of surplus value into money. Money is withdrawn from circulation and stored up as a hoard by selling commodities without subsequent buying. If this operation is therefore conceived as a general process, it seems inexplicable where the buyers are to come from, since in that process everybody would want to sell in order to hoard, and none would want to buy. And it must be conceived generally, since every individual capital may be in the process of accumulation. If we were to conceive the process of circulation between the various parts of the annual reproduction as taking place in a straight line, which would be wrong, as it always consists, with a few exceptions, of mutually opposite movements, then we should have to start from the producer of gold or silver, who buys without selling, and to assume that all others sell to him. In that case, the entire yearly social surplus product, the bearer of the entire surplus value, would pass into his hands, and all the other capitalists would distribute among themselves pro rata his surplus product, which naturally exists in the form of money, the natural embodiment in gold of his surplus value. For that portion of the product of the gold producer which has to make good his active capital is already tied up and disposed of. The surplus value of the gold producer, created in the form of gold, would then be the sole fund from which all other capitalists would draw the material for the conversion of their annual surplus product into money. The magnitude of its value would then have to be equal to the entire annual surplus value of society, which must first assume the guise of a hoard. Absurd as these assumptions would be, they would do nothing more than explain the possibility of a universal simultaneous formation of a hoard, and would not get reproduction itself one step further, except on the part of the gold producer. Before we resolve this seeming difficulty, we must distinguish between the accumulation in Department 1, production of means of production, and in Department 2, production of articles of consumption. We shall start with Department 1. Section 1. Accumulation in Department 1. Section 1A. the formation of a hoard. It is evident that both the investment of capital in the numerous lines of industry constituting Department One and the different individual investments of capital within each of these lines of industry, according to their age, that is, the space of time during which they already have functioned, quite aside from their volumes, technical conditions, market conditions, etc., are in different stages of the process of successive transformation from surplus value into potential money capital. Whether this money capital is to serve for the expansion of the active capital or for the establishment of new industrial enterprises, the two forms of expansion of production. One part of the capitalists is continually converting its potential money capital, grown to an appropriate size, into productive capital, that is, with the money hoarded by the conversion of surplus value into money, they buy means of production additional elements of constant capital. Another part of the capitalists is meanwhile still engaged in hoarding its potential money capital. Capitalists belonging to these two categories confront each other, some as buyers, the others as sellers, and each one of the two exclusively in one of these roles. For instance, let A sell 600 equal to 400C plus 100V plus 100S to B, who may represent more than one buyer. A sells 600 in commodities for 600 in money, of which 100 are surplus value, which he withdraws from circulation and hoards in the form of money. But these 100 in money are but the money form of the surplus product, which was the bearer of a value of 100. The formation of a hoard is no production at all, hence not an increment of production either. The action of the capitalist consists here merely in withdrawing from circulation the 100 in money he grabbed by the sale of his surplus product, holding on to it and impounding it. This operation is carried on not alone by A, but at numerous points along the periphery of circulation by other capitalists, A1, A2, A3, all of them working with equal zeal at this sort of hoard formation. These numerous points at which money is withdrawn from circulation and accumulated in numerous individual hoards or potential money capitals appear as so many obstacles to circulation, because they immobilize the money and deprive it of its capacity to circulate for a certain length of time. But it must be borne in mind that hoarding takes place in the simple circulation of commodities long before this is based on capitalist commodity production. The quantity of money existing in society is always greater than the part of it in actual circulation, although this swells or subsides according to circumstances. We find here again the same hoards and the same formation of hoards, but now as an element immanent in the capitalist process of production. One can understand the pleasure experienced when all these potential capitals within the credit system, by their concentration in the hands of banks, etc., become disposable, loanable capital, money capital, which indeed is no longer passive and music of the future, but active capital, growing in rank. However, A accomplishes the formation of a hoard only to the extent that he acts only as a seller, so far as his surplus product is concerned, and not afterward as a buyer. His successive production of surplus products, the vehicles of his surplus value to be converted into money, is therefore the premise of his forming a hoard. In the present case, where we are examining only the circulation within Department One, the bodily form of the surplus product, as that of the total product of which it is a part, is the bodily form of an element of constant capital One, That is to say, it belongs in the category of means of production creating means of production. We shall see presently what becomes of it, what function it performs, in the hands of buyers B, B1, B2, etc. It must be noted at this point, first and foremost, that although withdrawing money to the amount of his surplus value from circulation and hoarding it, A, on the other hand, throws commodities into it, without withdrawing other commodities in return. The capitalists of B, B1, B2, etc. are thereby enabled to throw money into circulation and withdraw only commodities from it. In the present case, these commodities, according to their bodily form and their destination, enter into the constant capital of B, B1, etc., as fixed or circulating element. We shall hear more about this anon, when we deal with the buyer of the surplus product, with B and B1, etc. Let us note, by the way, once more we find here, as we did in the case of simple reproduction, that the exchange of the various component parts of the annual product, i.e., their circulation, which must comprise at the same time the reproduction of the capital, and indeed its restoration in its various determinations, such as constant, variable, fixed, circulating, money, and commodity capital, does not by any means presuppose mere purchase of commodities supplemented by a subsequent sale, or a sale supplemented by a subsequent purchase, so that there would actually be a bare exchange of commodity for commodity, as political economy assumes, especially the free trade school since the physiocrats and Adam Smith. We know that the fixed capital, once the expenditure for it is made, is not replaced during the entire period of its function, but continues to act in its old form, while its value is gradually precipitated in the form of money. Now, we have seen that the periodical renewal of the fixed capital of Department 2, the entire capital value of Department 2 being converted into elements worth 1 V plus S, presupposes, on the one hand, the mere purchase of the fixed part of Department 2 constant capital, or 2C, reconverted from the form of money into its bodily form, to which corresponds the mere sale of Department 1 surplus value, or 1S, and presupposes, on the other hand, the mere sale on the part of Department 2C, the sale of its fixed depreciation part of the value precipitated in money, to which corresponds the mere purchase of 1S. In order that the exchange may take place normally in this case, it must be assumed that the mere purchase, on the part of Department 2C, is equal in magnitude of value to the mere sale on the part of Department 2C, and that in the same way, the mere sale of 1S to Department 2C, Section 1, is equal to its mere purchase from Department 2C, Section 2. Otherwise, simple reproduction is disturbed. Mere purchase here must be offset by a mere sale there. It must likewise be assumed in this case that the mere sale of that portion of 1S which forms the hoards of A, A1, A2 is balanced by the mere purchase of that portion of 1S which converts the hoards of B, B1, and B2 into elements of additional productive capital. So far as the balance is restored by the fact that the buyer acts later on as a seller to the same amount of value and vice versa, the money returns to the side that advanced it on purchasing, and which sold before it bought again. But the actual balance, so far as the exchange of commodities itself, the exchange of the various portions of the annual product, is concerned, demands that the values of the commodities exchanged for one another be equal. But inasmuch as only one-sided exchanges are made, a number of mere purchases on the one hand, a number of mere sales on the other, and we have seen that the normal exchange of the annual product on the basis of capitalism necessitates such one-sided metamorphoses, the balance can be maintained only on the assumption that in amount the value of the one-sided purchases and that of the one-sided sales tally. The fact that the production of commodities is the general form of capitalist production implies the role which money is playing in it, not only as a medium of circulation but also as money capital, engenders certain conditions of normal exchange peculiar to this mode of production, and therefore of the normal course of reproduction, whether it be on a simple or on an extended scale. Conditions which change into so many conditions of abnormal movement, into so many possibilities of crises, since a balance is itself an accident, owing to the spontaneous nature of this production. We have also seen that in the exchange of Department 1V for a corresponding amount of value of Department 2C, there takes place in the end, precisely for Department 2C, a replacement of commodities 2 by an equivalent commodity value 1, that therefore, on the part of aggregate capitalist 2, the sale of his own commodities is subsequently supplemented by the purchase of commodities from Department 1 of the same amount of value. This replacement takes place. But what does not take place is an exchange between capitalists 1 and 2 of their respective goods. Capitalist 2 sells its commodities to the working class of Department 1. The latter confronts it one-sidedly as a buyer of commodities, and it confronts that class one-sidedly as a seller of commodities. With the money proceeds so obtained, 2C confronts aggregate capitalist 1 one-sidedly as a buyer of commodities, and aggregate capitalist 1 confronts it one-sidedly as a seller of commodities up to the amount of 1V. It is only by means of this sale of commodities that Department 1 finally reproduces its variable capital in the form of money capital. If capital 1 faces that of 2 one-sidedly as a seller of commodities to the amount of 1V, it faces working class 1 as a buyer of commodities purchasing their labour power. And if working class 1 faces capitalist 2 one-sidedly as a buyer of commodities, namely as a buyer of means of subsistence, it faces capitalist 1 one-sidedly as a seller of commodities, namely as a seller of its labour power. The constant supply of labour power on the part of working class 1, the reconversion of a portion of commodity capital 1 into the money form of variable capital, the replacement of a portion of commodity capital 2 by natural elements of constant capital 2C, all these necessary premises demand one another, but they are brought about by a very complicated process, including three processes of circulation which occur independently of one another but intermingle. This process is so complicated that it offers ever so many occasions for running abnormally. Section 1B, The Additional Constant Capital. The surplus product, the bearer of surplus value, does not cost its appropriators, capitalists 1, anything. They are by no manner of means obliged to advance any money or commodities in order to obtain it. Even among the physiocrats, an advance was the general form of value embodied in elements of productive capital. Hence, what capitalists 1 advance is nothing but their constant and variable capital. The labourer not only preserves by his labour their constant capital, he not only replaces the value of their variable capital by a corresponding newly created portion of value in the form of commodities, by his surplus labour he supplies them with a surplus value existing in the form of surplus product. By the successive sale of this surplus product, they form a hoard, additional potential money capital. In the case under consideration, this surplus product consists from the outset of means of production of means of production. It is only when it reaches the hands of B, B1, B2, etc. of Department 1 that this surplus product functions as additional constant capital. But it is this virtually even in the hands of the accumulators of hoards, A, A1, A2 of Department 1 before it is sold. If we consider merely the amount of value of the reproduction on the part of Department 1, we are still moving within the bounds of simple reproduction, for no additional capital has been set in motion to create this virtual additional constant capital, the surplus product. Nor has any greater amount of surplus labour been expended than that on the basis of simple reproduction. The difference is here only in the form of the surplus labour performed, in the concrete nature of its particular useful character. It has been expended in means of production for Department 1C instead of Department 2C, in means of production of means of production instead of means of production of articles of consumption. In the case of simple reproduction, it was assumed that the entire surplus value 1 is spent as revenue, hence in commodities 2. Hence the surplus value consisted only of such means of production as have to replace constant capital 2 in its bodily form. In order that the transition from simple to extended reproduction may take place, production in Department 1 must be in a position to fabricate fewer elements of constant capital for Department 2, and so many the more for Department 1. This transition, which does not always take place without difficulties, is facilitated by the fact that some of the products of Department 1 may serve as means of production in either department. It follows, then, that considering the matter merely from the angle of volume of values, the material substratum of extended reproduction is produced within simple reproduction. It is simply surplus labour of working class 1 expended directly in the production of means of production, in the creation of virtual additional capital 1. The formation of virtual additional money capital on the part of A, A1 and A2 of Department 1 by the successive sale of their surplus product, which was formed without any capitalist expenditure of money, is therefore simply the money form of additionally produced means of production 1. Consequently, production of virtual additional capital expresses in our case, we shall see that it may also be formed in quite a different way, nothing but a phenomenon of the process of production itself, production in a particular form of elements of productive capital. The production of additional virtual money capital on a large scale, at numerous points of the periphery of circulation, is therefore but a result and expression of multifarious production of virtually additional productive capital, whose rise does not itself require additional expenditure of money on the part of the industrial capitalist. The successive transformation of this virtually additional productive capital into virtual money capital, hoard, on the part of A, A1, A2, etc. of Department 1, occasioned by the successive sale of their surplus product, hence by repeated one-sided sale of commodities without a supplementing purchase, is accomplished by a repeated withdrawal of money from circulation, and a corresponding formation of a hoard. Except in the case where the buyer is a gold producer, this hoarding does not in any way imply additional wealth in precious metals, but only a change in the function of money previously circulating. A while ago, it functioned as a medium of circulation. Now it functions as a hoard, as virtually new money capital in the process of formation. thus the formation of additional money capital and the quantity of the precious metals existing in a country are not in any causal relation to each other. Hence it follows furthermore, the greater the productive capital already functioning in a country, including the labour power, the producer of the surplus product incorporated in it, the more developed the productive power of labour, and thereby also the technical means for the rapid expansion of the production of means of production. The greater, therefore, the quantity of the surplus product, both as to its value and as to the quantity of use values in which it is represented. So much the greater is, 1. The virtually additional productive capital in the form of surplus product in the hands of A, A1, A2, etc., and 2. The quantity of this surplus product transformed into money, and hence that of the virtually additional money capital in the hands of A, A1, A2. The fact that Fullerton, for instance, does not want to hear of overproduction in the ordinary sense, but only of the overproduction of capital, meaning money capital, again shows how extremely little of the mechanism of their own system even the best bourgeois economists understand. Whereas the surplus product, directly produced and appropriated by the capitalists AA1, A2 of Department 1, is the real basis of the accumulation of capital, that is, of extended reproduction, although it does not actually function in this capacity until it reaches the hands of B, B1, B2, etc. of Department 1, it is, on the contrary, absolutely unproductive in its chrysalis stage of money as a hoard and virtual money capital in process of gradual formation. It runs parallel with the process of production in this form, but lies outside of it. It is a dead weight of capitalist production. The eagerness to utilize this surplus value accumulating as virtual money capital for the purpose of deriving profits or revenue from it finds its object accomplished in the credit system and papers. Money capital thereby gains in another form an enormous influence on the course and the stupendous development of the capitalist system of production. The surplus product converted into virtual money capital will grow so much more in volume, the greater was the total amount of already functioning capital whose functioning brought it into being. With the absolute increase of the volume of the annually reproduced virtual money capital, its segmentation also becomes easier, so that it is more rapidly invested in any particular business, either in the hands of the same capitalist or in those of others, for instance, members of the family, in the case of a partition of inherited property, etc. By segmentation of money capital is meant here that it is wholly detached from the parent stock, in order to be invested as a new money capital in a new and independent business. While the sellers of the surplus product, A1, A2, etc. of Department 1, have obtained it as a direct outcome of the process of production, which does not envisage any additional acts of circulation except the advance of constant and variable capital required also in simple reproduction, and while they thereby construct the real basis for reproduction on an extended scale, and in actual fact manufacture virtually additional capital, the attitude of B, B1, and B2, etc., of Department 1, is different. Point 1. Not until it reaches the hands of B, B1, B2, etc., of Department 1, will the surplus product of A, A1, A2, etc., actually function as additional constant capital. We leave out of consideration for the present the other element of productive capital, the additional labour power. In other words, the additional variable capital. Point 2. In order that the surplus product may reach their hands, an act of circulation is wanted. They must buy it. In regard to point 1, it should be noted here that a large portion of the surplus product, virtually additional constant capital, although produced by A1A2 of Department 1 in a given year, may not function as industrial capital in the hands of B1B2 of Department 1 until the following year, or still later. With reference to point 2, the question arises, whence comes the money needed for the process of circulation? Since the products created by B1, B2, etc. of Department 1 re-enter in kind into their own process, it goes without saying that pro tanto, to that extent, a portion of their own surplus product is transferred directly, without any intervention of circulation, to their productive capital and becomes an additional element of constant capital. And pro tanto, they do not effect the conversion of the surplus product of A1, etc. of Department 1 into money. Aside from this, where does the money come from? We know that B1, B2, etc. of Department 1 have formed their hoard in the same way as A1, etc., by the sale of their respective surplus products. Now they have arrived at the point where their hoarded, only virtual money capital is to function effectively as additional money capital. But this is merely going round in circles. The question still remains, where does the money come from which the B's of Department 1 before withdrew from circulation and accumulated? We know from the analysis of simple reproduction that Capitalists 1 and 2 must have a certain amount of money at hand in order to be able to exchange their surplus product. In that case, the money which served only as revenue to be spent for articles of consumption returned to the capitalists in the same measure in which they had advanced it for the exchange of their respective commodities. Here, the same money reappears, but performing a different function. The A's and B's of Department 1 supply one another alternately with the money for converting surplus product into additional virtual money capital, and throw the newly formed money capital alternately back into circulation as a means of purchase. The only assumption made in this case is that the amount of money in the country in question, the velocity of circulation, etc., being constant, should suffice for both the active circulation and the reserve hoard. As we have seen, this is the same assumption as had to be made in the case of simple circulation of commodities. Only the function of the hoards is different in the present case. Furthermore, the available amount of money must be larger. First, because under capitalist production all the products, with the exception of newly produced precious metals and the few products consumed by the producer himself, are created as commodities, and must therefore pass through the pupation stage of money. Secondly, because on a capitalist basis, the quantity of the commodity capital and the magnitude of its value is not only absolutely greater, but also grows with incomparably greater rapidity. Thirdly, because an ever-expanding variable capital must always be converted into money capital. Fourthly, because the formation of new money capitals keeps pace with the extension of production, so that the material for corresponding hoard formation must be available. This is generally true of the first phase of capitalist production, in which even the credit system is mostly accompanied by metallic circulation, and it applies to the most developed phase of the credit system as well, to the extent that metallic circulation remains its basis. On the one hand, an additional production of precious metals, being alternately abundant or scarce, may here exert a disturbing influence on the prices of commodities not only at long, but also at very short intervals. On the other hand, the entire credit mechanism is continually occupied in reducing the actual metallic circulation to a relatively more and more decreasing minimum by means of sundry operations, methods, and technical devices. The artificiality of the entire machinery and the possibility of disturbing its normal course increase to the same extent. The different B's, B2, B3, etc., of Department 1, whose virtual new money capital enters upon its function as active capital, may have to buy their products, portions of their surplus product, from one another, or to sell them to one another. To that extent, the money advanced by them for the circulation of their surplus product flows back under normal conditions to the different B's in the same proportion in which they had advanced it for the circulation of their respective commodities. If the money circulates as a means of payment, then only balances are to be squared so far as the mutual purchases and sales do not cover one another. But it is important first and foremost to assume here, as everywhere, metallic circulation in its simplest, most primitive form, because then the flux and reflux, the squaring of balances, in short, all elements appearing under the credit system as consciously regulated processes, present themselves as existing independently of the credit system, and the matter appears in primitive form instead of the later reflected form. Section 1C. The Additional Variable Capital. Hitherto we have been dealing only with additional constant capital. Now we must direct our attention to a consideration of the additional variable capital. We have explained at great length in Volume 1 that labour power is always available under the capitalist system of production, and that more labour can be rendered fluent if necessary, without increasing the number of labourers or the quantity of labour power employed. We therefore need not go into this any further, but shall rather assume that the portion of the newly created money capital capable of being converted into variable capital will always find at hand the labour power into which it is to transform itself. It has also been explained in Volume 1 that a given capital may expand its volume of production within certain limits without any accumulation. But here we are dealing with the accumulation of capital in its specific meaning, so that the expansion of production implies the conversion of surplus value into additional capital, and thus also an expansion of the capital forming the basis of production. The gold producer can accumulate a portion of his golden surplus value as virtual money capital. As soon as it becomes sufficient in amount, he can transform it directly into new variable capital without first having to sell his surplus product. He can likewise convert it into elements of the constant capital. But in the latter case, he must find at hand the material elements of his constant capital. It is immaterial whether, as was assumed in our presentation hitherto, each producer works to stock up and then brings his finished product to the market, or fills orders. The actual expansion of production, that is, the surplus product, is assumed in either case, in the one case as actually available, in the other as virtually available, capable of delivery.